This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast, brought to you by Jayhawk Slant. We go behind the scenes to bring you the inside scoop from Les Miles and his staff, the KU players, and recruits. Here are your hosts of the Football Podcast, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey everybody, this is Randy Withers and welcome into another football only edition of the Inside Slant Podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. It's a big one for Jayhawk Nation. It is finally K-State week. The Sunflower Showdown is here as Les Miles and his squad gear up for the matchup with the Wildcats. Let's not waste any more time. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my partner, the publisher of Jayhawk Slant and our Kansas football insider, Mr. John Kirby. John, how you doing tonight?
Good, Randy. What's up, man? Did you survive the trip to watch Clemson?
You know, it was the trip back that was the hardest part. Monday morning, we'd have lunch there in South Carolina. It's 80 degrees, literally. I get off the plane Monday night at KCI. It's 36 degrees and there's snow falling. And it snowed all day today. I don't know what is going on around here. I mean, it's snowing at the end of October. Shay's got a date. I mean, what else is going to happen now?
I know. Hey, if I were you, I'd get back on that plane and go back to South Carolina. Hey, how about Shay? I call Shay. I go, hey, podcast set. We're going to go late Wednesday night. What do you think? Is there anything? Do you want to go basketball? And he's kind of like, well, there hadn't been much recruiting going on. And the exhibition game isn't until Thursday night. And I'm going, okay, well, what do you think? You want us just to go football only on this one? And then all of a sudden he's like, and I got a date. I'm like, dude, you got a date. Just tell me you got a date. You don't got to beat around the bush, man. We all get it. So
yeah,
so
quit burying the lead. Just out with it and let's move on. I mean, you know, we probably could have gotten people mad by talking about the return of the KUMU game again. But I mean, guy's got a date.
He's got a date. You got to let him go. You got to give him a hall pass. He gets one tonight on that. And hey, we don't want to mess up his mojo.
No, not at all. And especially when, you know, we were talking about it before we got started recording tonight, John. There's so much buzz around this Kansas State matchup and around the Sunflower Showdown. And it's really, it's only Wednesday. It's been a lot of fun already just hearing both sides chirping. And that seems like there's a real renewed interest in this game.
Yeah, there is. It's good to see, too, because listen, since about, 2009, I just don't know if people have gone into the game, especially from the Kansas side, with any confidence. And, you know, you're hearing some confidence from the Kansas fans. Obviously, Kansas State coming off that win against Oklahoma, their fans are confident. And it's good to hear a little fun smack talk. And, you know, my phone's been ringing. I've got several K-State friends, and, you know, they've been calling me. And, you know, it's just, you know, for the first time, I think both sides can sit here and say, hey, somebody's got both teams have a fighting chance to win this game.
It is, and I think you're exactly right. I think it's one of those two where there's enough of it that's up in the air, too, that people really aren't sure. I mean, K-State has obviously, I mean, the win against Oklahoma last weekend is clearly the high point of their season so far, but they've had some struggles at times. KU, you know, we coming off the big win over Texas Tech in an absolutely unthinkable way to win that game, but we can look back on the loss to West Virginia and to Coastal Carolina, and still, I don't know if really either fan base is sure what they're going to see from their squads when they roll into Memorial Stadium at 2:30 on Saturday.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I think we'll talk about here in the podcast is what team's going to show up. And obviously, you know, that's the hardest part when you're trying to pick this game.
As we start previewing this thing, we're going to be joined today by Matt Hall from K-State Online to preview Saturday's Sunflower Showdown and get his take on the game. Then we'll turn to the recruiting trail, as we always do, and we'll be joined by the Jayhawks' latest commitment, wide receiver Stephen McBride. But John, we've got to start off. We've already kind of mentioned it. The Jayhawks win over Texas Tech on Saturday night. I am, truth be told, you already said it. I was sitting in Death Valley watching Clemson roll over a Boston College squad that I had already seen get rolled over once this year when the Jayhawks took them out early in the season. What did you think of Les Miles' squad and the performance against the Red Raiders last weekend?
Well, Randy, it was good covering the program every week like you and I do when we're around the coaches and the players. It was good for them to get that win. You know, they've had some close games. Those kids have played hard. The coaches have coached hard. They've given a lot of effort. They've been in a lot of games that they've played this year. And I think this is one of those games, and I don't know if it's really a hump game yet where that gets them over the hump, but what it does is it shows that if you keep going out and fighting and playing hard, that eventually some good things are going to happen. You know, we had West Virginia. That was a winnable game. You had Texas where they lose on a last-second field goal, then they come back and win on a last-second field goal. So, you know, maybe things even out. The football gods are kind of, you know, on your side that weekend. You know, Bryce Tornaden goes down. Okay, I mean, he gets ejected for the targeting call. He's your starting safety. He's your defensive captain. They were already missing Jeremiah McCullough. They're thin now at safety. And you're sitting here thinking, oh, God, you know, this is a blow. This is going to be something. Can they get over this? They fight through it. You know, the kids played hard. They played with a lot of effort. You know, fell behind 17-0. You know, Carter Stanley throws the pick early on, and you're just sitting there going, golly, you know, can they keep falling behind and keep coming back? And they did. I joked with somebody that one of the players, I said, hey, is it in your guys' game plan to fall behind? And then because you guys keep falling behind and then you keep coming back, you know, in all these games. So, you know, one of these games here, they're going to want to start out even Steven or play ahead.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. That was one of the things that I heard on Tuesday when I went down and was talking with Dalen Charlotte and Andrew Parchment and with Puka Williams as well. They all talked about how important it is to finally get off to a fast start, and how, you know, they said it's not really that they're doing anything different in practice or that their mindset is different in games. They, you know, Puka said, he goes, you know, sometimes it's, you don't get that sense of urgency maybe until you look up and realize that, wow, we're in trouble. We got to get rolling. Okay, so Kirby, what did you take away from the win?
Well, I take away that they're playing with confidence, you know, falling down 17-0 like we just talked about and finding a way to come back to win. I also, something I took from it, Randy, was the fact that Texas Tech was loading the box. They play that 3-3 defense, but golly, it looked more like a 4-4. I mean, they had eight guys in the box at all times, and they really had Puka Williams bottled up. And come hell or high water, they were not going to let him beat them. So it went back to Carter Stanley and the receivers. And I tell you, I went back and watched that Texas Tech game for a second time on Sunday. And when I go back and watch it, it really stands out to me. Kansas has some weapons. And I don't think, maybe you take it for granted, and maybe it's because, you know, they're still, you know, haven't put all the pieces together and everything, and they haven't, you know, gotten over that hump that we just talked about. But when you watch Kansas, they've got Puka Williams. You've got to count for him. All of a sudden, you've got Parchment. You've got Charlotte. You've got Stephon Robinson, who's really starting to look like the target that Stanley's going to. Kwame Lassiter's come on solid. And, you know, I listened to
Melvin Gardner bursts on the scene.
Melvin Gardner. I mean, you know, Melvin Gardner, he's got a lot of talent. And I heard Kleiman from K-State's press conference this week, and he said he used the word electric when he described Kansas's receivers. And I'll tell you, I know the Big 12 is a conference that's known for offenses and offensive players, but the more I start looking up and down the conference and I start looking at everybody's personnel and running backs and wide receivers, I'm sitting here starting to think, what teams have a better running back receiver group right now in terms of production than Kansas? Obviously, Oklahoma would be one, okay? And then you start looking around and you start going, who else is more dynamic than what Kansas is doing right now? And I think the one thing that stood out to me is, you know, back-to-back 500-plus-yard games of offensive output, I think Kansas is a team that can be a scary team on a given day if they can get some defensive stops, because they're going to find a way to move the football. So that's one thing that really stood out to me about Texas Tech. And I'll tell you one other thing that did. I know the defense gave up some yards and they gave up some points, but I'll tell you what, late in the game, three of the last four possessions that Texas Tech had, the Kansas defense was able to get stops. And I think that is a huge reason they won that game. Because if they don't get those stops, I don't think Kansas wins. So that defense that rarely gets a lot of credit, because everybody wants to talk about the offense and what they're doing on that end, the defense stepped up and did their part to help them win that game.
Now, before we start our breakdown of the Sunflower Showdown, let's go ahead and bring up the studio line where Matt Hall is on and is going to talk with John about Chris Klieman's Wildcats.
We are joined by Matt Hall from KSO, Kansas State Online, who covers the Kansas State program on the Rivals.com network. Matt, how you doing?
Hey, very good. I appreciate you having the time to have me on, and I'm looking forward to talking about, the biggest K-State KU game in an awfully long time, at least in football.
Well, you talk about a big game. Kansas State, big win over Oklahoma. And, I don't know if you've seen the buzz that you have for the KU-K-State game like you have now, but you've got Kansas State coming off of a big win, Kansas coming off of a big win. Just what's the feel in Manhattan and everybody talking about the game this weekend?
It's different than I've experienced in, quite some time. And I'm not saying this just because I'm on your show and stuff, but a lot of it I think is because of Kansas and how good they've been. K-State fans, are incredibly excited about what happened Saturday against Oklahoma. And it was a lot of fun to be around and to see, but, and a lot of them, myself, at least as a writer, stayed up and watched Kansas beat Texas Tech. And that's a week after watching Kansas go down to Austin. And if you know it better than I do, had every opportunity, had Texas beat there late. So, you're going on the road to play a team that could have won its last two games and did win its last game, a team that could have beat you if you're K-State easily the last 2 years, it's just really, really exciting because K-State has a lot to play for, and so does Kansas, because not only does a win, beat K-State for them, that's their fourth win of the season already if they get that. For K-State, it'd be their sixth, they'd be bowl eligible and kind of in the Big 12 race, I guess you have to say, after beating Oklahoma. We've been talking about it for a long time. There's just a lot for both sides to be excited about, and I think it just matters more because at the end of the day, both fan bases, even if they don't like their team, they actually know, in the back of their, in their heart that they're playing a good team on Saturday and that a win would be meaningful. And that hasn't always been in the case either way, in this series.
I want to start over on the offensive side of the ball. What are the strengths of the Kansas State offense? And when everything is clicking, what do they want to do?
When it's going well, they want to look like, the term pro-style offense is always funny because now pro-style offense isn't what it used to be, but they'd want to be a team that's under center more than half the time, a team that will use the traditional running game more than you see, from anybody else in the Big 12 and more than you see from K-State back in the day when they would run, the quarterback 20 to 30 times a game. You'd want to see him use play action to go down the field. As much as they could in the passing game to try to create more big plays down the field as opposed to more of a spread type that's just going to get a lot of extended running plays, all those kind of things. And K-State had all that happen against Oklahoma last week, so it's exciting for K-State people to see it happen against a good team and what was thought to be an improved Oklahoma defense. So that's what they want to be, but outside of that Oklahoma game, if you look at TCU and Baylor and Oklahoma State, the other Big 12 games, K-State's had a hard time doing those things against Big 12 opposition until last week.
Matt, I've watched Kansas State a few times, and I have seen them have some struggles offensively. So what was it against Oklahoma that allowed them to go out and move the ball like they did?
It's really tricky to know because, I think some of it has to do with Oklahoma. I think we had some Oklahoma people near us who, even before the game, kept reminding us, hey, like, this is an Oklahoma defense that's not built, to stop a team that's going to run A-gap power and play two tight ends and play a fullback and all those things. So, part of it may have been the matchup was really good for K-State. In hindsight, I didn't know that going in, but in hindsight, it was partially that. And so I think it's a combination of that, and then K-State just got some momentum early and felt good about itself, after it didn't score on its first drive, but it did on its, I think it's second. And then it had a number of long drives throughout the game to where it really just started believing in itself and it got easier. I don't think, a flip was switched and they just figured something out or figured out a different thing in their blocking scheme up front or a different thing in the running game, and it just kind of clicked for them. I don't think it was that simple. I think it was just, Kansas too. Persistence with a new coaching staff, persistence in the system and trying to get better at it and understanding. And I know Kansas made a coordinator change, so they've even had to, you know, change that a little bit. But you see the Jayhawks getting better throughout the year. And maybe nothing is changing for K-State. It's just more time in the system, getting more comfortable with it.
Yeah, I'm going to switch over to the defensive side of the ball and just talk about the Wildcats there. What scheme do they use, and who are the key players to watch?
Yeah, it'll be a base 4-2-5. I mean, you almost never see K-State, like anybody, you never really see K-State go 4-3. They're more aggressive than they were in the past, but that's not saying a ton, you know? I mean, in the past, under Tom Hayes, it was just quarters and keep everything in front of you, no big plays. And there's still some of that in the Scotty Hazleton defense. They're still believers that if you make teams make good plays, you know, 12, 13, 14 snaps in a row, eventually they'll make a mistake. So it's still not an incredibly aggressive unit, but it is more aggressive than last year's. They will play closer to the line of scrimmage. I think the biggest difference is the defensive line, although the players are a lot of the same names you've probably heard in the past, they've been very, very good. And the players to watch, Wyatt Hubert, you know, everyone says they've got these guys who are unblockable, and that word gets overused a little bit, but he really is right now. I know the Oklahoma media and people thought he was an NFL D lineman they couldn't handle, and he's just a sophomore from Topeka. He's been very, very good this season. I think he's the main guy to watch. Just the D line in general. Trey Deshaun's another Kansas kid who's a senior who's played very well at defensive tackle. Reggie Walker was the only preseason All Big 12 pick for this K-State team at the other defensive end spot. So, you know, in football, if you can get pressure with your front four and, you know, play coverage with seven, you have a chance to be pretty good, even if you're average talent-wise in the back seven. And I think K-State is, and I think that's what they're doing now. Is they're playing really well up front, and the guys, you know, in the back end are just playing pretty solid football.
I know you've been around the coaches and the players today, and I know you will be throughout the rest of the week when you guys have media access. I mean, coming off a big win, how does Kleiman get them grounded, ready for this game, and just what's your feel of being around the players and the coaches of what their sense going into this game is?
I think K-State's lucky, you know, to be playing Kansas this week. Not because it's an easy game, because it's certainly not, and it's going to be a hard place to play Saturday, but I think it's probably the same for KU on the flip side too. You know, coming off their win, getting to play K-State, it's a lot easier to say, hey, we've got to refocus this week on your biggest rival within this conference and the team that most people care about you beating more than anybody else. So I think that's probably really helped. And being around them today, I did genuinely believe they've moved on from the Oklahoma game. I didn't know if I would think that going in or not today. They didn't seem too interested in it anymore. But I've got to believe there's still got to be some chunk of that program who's still excited to see what's on Twitter about the Oklahoma win and to read the newspapers about it and to read our sites about it and that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't be shocked if there's still some hangover from it. But if I'm being honest, they didn't really give any indication of it today. And I think both teams are probably somewhat lucky they're playing each other to where it's pretty hard to let down against, you know, K-State or KU.
Matt, my final question for you, and this is where I put you on the spot a little bit. You know, if I pin you down and, you know, tell me about
the... I haven't even come up with a prediction yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, all right, here's the deal.
I can do one on the fly.
So
I can do one.
So give me your breakdown here. Tell me how you think this game matches up. And if you don't have to give a score, tell me how you think it's going to play out.
I can definitely do that. I mean, I think it's going to be, I really think it's going to be a fantastic football game. I've talked to a lot of K-State fans, even today, who asked me, why are you giving so much credit to them? Why are you acting like they're the better team and that kind of stuff? I'm like, I'm not acting like they're the better team. That's not the point. But if you don't watch Kansas this year and think that you're big and don't think they're a better football team, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, Carter Stanley, who lit K-State up 2 years ago in Lawrence, has been fantastic. Andrew Parchment, Puka Williams. I mean, I watched that whole Tech game. I don't know how many 50-yard plays they had. So I think K-State's going to have a hard time stopping those big plays. The Wildcats have had tackling issues this year. I think it'll hurt them against guys like Puka Williams and Parchment and so on. I think K-State will win. I just think they're a slightly better team, to oversimplify it, you know, too much. I do think Kansas has better skill talent than K-State. And I think that will keep it very, very close. I would expect K-State to win a game probably by a touchdown or less in the upper 20s or lower 30s. I just haven't settled on a score yet, but I think it could go either way. And I think it's going to be, for both sides, the most exciting game between these two since, I mean, it wasn't a fun one for K-State fans. Remember, but 2004 when KU beat K-State and Lawrence, that was quite an atmosphere. So probably the most exciting one since that one. And then hopefully, you know, for the people and, you know, more on my side, it doesn't go the same way as that one.
Well, Matt, I really appreciate you joining us. I know this is a crazy week with media and sure. You know, all the attention on the Sunflower Showdown, and I will look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Well, of course, I appreciate the time, and I'll be happy to be there.
And that was Matt Hall from KSO with the Wildcat perspective. John, let's go ahead and dig into the Sunflower Showdown. With back-to-back weeks of 500-plus yards of total offense for the Jayhawks, Brent Dierman is clearly the man. This offensive unit has a ton of momentum right now. What have you seen from this group, and what has he done that has created such an explosive output over the last several games?
Well, you know, Randy, I said when he was hired, and there was a lot of hype and a lot of excitement, and I was excited to see him coach because I had heard enough from people to understand that I think he could do some good things. But I told people, listen, he's not going to be able to come in and sprinkle some magic dust and just put it on the offense and all of a sudden they're going to go crazy. Okay.
You keep talking about him and magic dust. I've laughed about it almost every time you've said it too.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I figured out. So after the win, I'm walking around the Anderson Family Football Complex, kind of sitting there going back with the media. I went back out and there's Dierman coming down and he's got this wheeling like a briefcase, but it looked like a luggage that he was bringing out. And I kind of looked at him and said hi, and he said hi back. And, you know, and I thought, hey, you know what? Maybe there's some magic dust in that little thing.
That's where he keeps it all.
Hey, so here's the deal. I kept telling everybody, listen, he doesn't have some magic potion. He doesn't have some secret that nobody else does. Well, now I'm starting to think maybe he does. Okay. So maybe I'm wrong. So, you know, Randy, the one thing I like about him, and you know, you hear it in a lot of other sports, maybe where a shooter is in a rhythm and he's shooting threes, or a pitcher gets in a rhythm and he's in a groove. It seems like the last couple times Dierman's, when you've watched him and when you've watched the offense, it seems like he finds a groove or a rhythm, and it seems like he gets in that in his play calls. I mean, they're not very predictable. He kind of goes off script sometimes. Sometimes he throws when you think he's going to run. Sometimes he runs when you think he's going to throw. So it's been fun watching him. So, and I will tell you this too. I think he waves the wheat faster and stronger than everybody else in the stadium.
Hey, he keeps saying on Twitter, get the wheat ready. And I think that really is a great kind of a peek behind the curtain as to what makes him unique. You know, when talking to the guys on Tuesday, the thing that I heard, and I heard the week before too, the energy that he brings as a young coach is, and one that has been successful and believes in his system, I think it's infectious. And those kids are picking up on it, and they really seem to enjoy not just playing the game. I mean, everybody loves playing games. They seem to enjoy going to work and enjoy the process with him. And I think that's really having an impact on the quality of work that they're able to get out of practice every single day. And it's starting to show on Saturdays. Now, I know you've watched Kansas State several times on several Saturdays this fall. What's your take on KSU and Chris Klieman in his first year at the helm in Manhattan?
Yeah, Randy, I've watched him play Baylor. I saw him play TCU, Mississippi State, Oklahoma. I'm trying to think. There's somebody else in there, too. I saw a little bit of Oklahoma State. I didn't see the whole game. You know, they're like Kansas. I think they're a hard team to figure out. The game against Oklahoma, okay, if that's the team that shows up, now you got a dogfight on your hands, okay? Because the one thing that when I watched him play Oklahoma, the one thing that stood out is I kind of felt like I was watching some of Bill Snyder's teams. I mean, they're physical up front. They start five seniors on the offensive line. They've got three seniors on the defensive line. And they kind of took the fight to Oklahoma. And I'll tell you what else that reminded me of a Bill Snyder team is when I've talked to defensive coordinators in the past that have played Kansas State, they've always joked that Bill Snyder is like this mad scientist and he will find a way to run the same play like five different ways in five different formations, but it's the same play. And they're hard to dissect and figure out what they're doing. Well, the other day, I thought they were doing some of that. And, you know, maybe that's Colin Klein, you know, still on staff and has maybe a hand in helping out. But you saw some remnants of the Snyder era with the quarterback run game and the power stuff they were doing. And I thought on both sides of the ball, they pushed Oklahoma around a little bit, and that's obviously the strength of their team. You know, I think their skill players are just okay. They're solid. You know, special teams is very good, and I think that's a big concern going into this week against Kansas is Kansas has got to match them in special teams. I'm not saying outplay Kansas State. I'm talking they've got to just play even, Steven. They can't be negative in the special teams game. And, hey, listen, Chris Dawson is the strength and conditioning coach there. I knew Chris well when he was at Kansas. I've even talked to him a couple times when he went to Kansas State. I've always said this. He's one of the best in the business. And when you talk to people, they will tell you that when you see players that go to Kansas State as freshmen, they said by the time you look at that kid as a junior, they said he's one of those guys that can really help transform kids, and they get bigger and they look different after a couple years in his strength and conditioning program. And I think, you know, at Kansas, we saw that under Mangino. He took a lot of kids that came into the program that, you know, needed work, and he took them and helped develop them and get them stronger. And I think he brings a mentality to their program, because we saw it at Kansas. And I think he brings some of that tough mentality there. In terms of Klieman, I'm one of those guys that thinks you've got to wait 2 or 3 years to see what happens there, because he took over a turnkey system from Bill Snyder. Okay, Kansas State won 5 games last year. It's not like they were awful. Bill Snyder is a detailed coach. I don't care if people said he lost his touch in recruiting or his ideas were getting old. Bill Snyder is one of the greatest coaches of our lifetime. I guarantee you that program was left in good shape in terms of structure. They still had Chris Dawson there. Those kids were still tough. They played physical. So it'll be interesting what happens, what Klieman can do when he loses these 5 senior offensive linemen, when he loses those senior defensive linemen. How does he plug those in? When he loses Skylar Thompson after next season, who does he replace them with? So I think the jury will still be out on Klieman a little bit, just until you can get enough time to have a sample size to understand what he can do with the program.
Now, last week was the first time that you and I found ourselves really on opposite sides of our predictions. John, what happens this week between KU and K-State? You give your prediction and then I'll follow up with mine.
Yeah, you, what I said, Kansas in a close game over Tech, and you said Tech in a close game over Kansas, so I'm up on you 1-0. You know, Randy, here's the thing. This is what this comes down to for me. And I'm looking at this game as if I had to put my own money on the game in a straight up situation, okay? I'm taking all factors of what team I cover out of this. I was talking to a high school baseball coach today who's a friend of mine, and he's a Kansas State grad, and he was said, you know, what do you think of this matchup? And I said, you know, putting it in baseball terms, I said Kansas State reminds me of that kid that you can put on the mound. He's solid. He's going to throw an above average fastball. He's going to mix in a curve. He's going to mix in a change. He's going to throw, always be around the plate. He's going to throw strikes, and you know what you get with him. He's solid. You can put him out there, and you kind of see what his game is always going to be like consistently. And Kansas comes across as that team as, you know, the big power pitcher who can heat it up and get into the 90s and maybe mix in a hard slider. And when that slider's on, he's tough. And when he's locating that ball, he's tough. And if he's on his game, you are going to be in for an absolute battle when he's on his game. But he's got to be on his game. So when I look at these two teams, I think Kansas has like a higher ceiling, okay? I think if Kansas goes out and plays their top game, I think that they're scary, or scarier than Kansas State, because they can score points. I mean, Kansas can get you in the upper 30s, 40s, and they can get in that 500-yard plus range. But you've got to play defense. You've got to play special teams. So Kansas also has a little lower floor, in my opinion. So I think K-State, we know who they are and what they are. Kansas, higher ceiling. So here's what I would do. If I had to take my own money, Randy, I'm probably going to end up putting it on what I know is there and what I feel is the solid choice. So I'm going to go with this one. Kansas State 31, Kansas 27.
Interesting. interesting. It's funny that you go, that's, you and I are typically, our numbers have been pretty close. And I was close to that. And it's funny, I'm sitting here and my cat, who just happens to be gray and white, has been just mean mugging me for about the past 5 minutes. So I don't know if that's some kind of a sign or not, but I think I'm going to go with her on this one. I see this. I agree with you. I think Kansas State is closer to where they want to be, to where Chris Klieman is trying to go with that program. It was more of a ready-made situation. You mentioned the five offensive linemen, having the veteran starter returning at quarterback, and Skylar Thompson, a dual threat guy that can make plays both with his arm and with his feet. They are just a little further along in the process, because that staff, when Chris Klieman and his associates came in, they weren't starting from as far down as Les Miles and this crew is in Lawrence and at the Anderson Family Football Complex. That's not to diminish the progress that I think has been made so far, and it's evident in Lawrence. I just think that the gap is a little bit wide right now. I think next year could be really, really interesting, and the year after that is when I think we'll really start to get a feel for which of the two coaching hires was better. I'm going to say Kansas 24, K-State 30.
All right. So
pretty
we got
close, but like I say, that gray and white cat that's been staring me down for about 5 minutes, I think, you know, I felt like she was threatening me that I might get scratched up in my sleep if I didn't pick the Cats. So I'm going K-State.
See, you're going with the cat. You're going with the cat for the Cats. Well, here,
exactly.
Hey, Randy, here's the thing.
I'm doing what my daughter is telling me to right now. That's what Zoe's saying.
And this is the thing I would say on it, too. If you told me that I had to bet on the game, that's what I would do. If it was really my choice and I had money and I was going to make a bet and it was straight up, I probably wouldn't touch the thing, because I think that Kansas has the ability absolutely to win the game, okay? But when I'm picking here, I've got to pick like I'm doing my job, and I'm not being a homer or leaning to one way or another, because I've watched Kansas State and I've watched them go against Mississippi State and they put up 270 yards and they found a way to win. I watched them go against TCU, and I don't think they had 270 yards. You know, I've watched them, Baylor, I don't think they had 275 yards. I don't know the numbers. I'm just going off, remember what I watch and remember the box score. But Kansas State's had some games where they have not looked very good offensively. And if Kansas gets some stops and they contain Thompson, then, hey, it could be a different deal. But I've laid my card and said my piece, and so have you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now let's go ahead and turn our attention, like we have had the opportunity to do really throughout the season now, with the news that just continues to roll in from the Jayhawks. Les Miles' staff continues to be really one of the busiest on the recruiting trail of any Division I college program in the country right now, where they have picked up another commitment from wide receiver Stephen McBride. Let's go ahead. We're going to bring up the studio line again as the newest commit joins John to talk about his decision and why he picked KU.
Our next guest is Stephen McBride, who is the latest commitment for the Jayhawks, and he is a talented wide receiver from East Ascension in Louisiana. Stephen, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
You know, I want to go back to the beginning, okay? I want to talk about your visit in the summer and just talk about what stood out to you when you first went to Kansas for the camp.
What stood out to me when I first went there was I really liked the community. Like, it is very clean and it's very nice out there. So, and when I first got there, like, it really stood out to me. I feel like that when I first got to the camp, I feel like I had to do my best. And, like, when I got the offer, I feel like this might could be for me. So they've been following me my whole season. I've been looking into them my whole season, and I really made my commitment right there.
All right, so I want to talk about, so you leave campus, and then over the next 4 or 5 months, you get a chance to develop a relationship with the coaches and get to know them better. You know, just talk about what you learned about the program from those guys.
What I learned is that I know that Yeah, I know Coach Emmett. He put some people in the NFL. That's my dream. So I know that he works it with his receivers, and he make them have their dreams come true.
I know you told me that you'd always been, you know, Kansas was high on your list. So when you get that phone call and they tell you, hey, we've got a spot for you, because I know you said you found out a spot opened up. Just tell me about what was going through your mind and what really the decision that made you say, hey, I want to commit to Kansas, and how did that all go down?
And I was very excited, especially when I talked to Coach Les Miles. I was very excited. So I took it, and it's been on my mind the whole time. I really tried to commit early, but I think they didn't have a spot open for me. But once they had that spot open for me, I took the chance and made it happen.
When you called Coach Jones and Coach Miles, you know, what was their reaction when you said you wanted to commit?
They were very excited. They were really excited. They can't wait till I get up there.
So I know you've gone on your unofficial visit last summer. What's your next plans? Do you plan to take an official soon?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I got to put on that Kansas jersey.
Right. Absolutely. So, hey, how's your season been going? I've been watching some of those highlights. You've had some pretty nice catches on Huddle. Talk about how your senior season's been going.
It's been going good. It's been going how it's supposed to be going. I'm getting better and better every day. I'm making big plays every Friday night, and I'm a big stand-up to the team. So it's been going very well.
You know, Steven, I wanted to ask you this because over the last, 4 years, Kansas has really done a good job recruiting players from Louisiana. Is that something that you notice, and does that help you out when you say, hey, I'm thinking about leaving home and going to Kansas, and there's a lot of guys from my state that are playing there?
Oh, yeah. That's big. That's real big, especially with a legendary coach, Les Miles. That's from LSU. That's real big. So especially like the running back, Puka Williams, I've been seeing him like my whole high school career, and he's really good. So it's good playing with him.
Well, Steven, I really appreciate you coming on the Inside Slant podcast, and I look forward to talking with you after your official visit.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
This staff is still putting out offers to recruits in the class of 2020, and I know this has been a hot topic on the message board. I know you and I both chimed in a little bit during that thread today. I want to get your thoughts on that. As somebody that has covered Kansas football for longer than anyone on the beat, when you look at that and the number, you know, we don't know how many scholarships this program has to give in this class. We just know that they've been in a scholarship situation for a while now. Give us your thoughts on the commits in this class, continuing to recruit for 2020, as well as maybe tell us some of the other things that you're hearing about, things that may be on the back burner or continuing to bubble for this program for the current class.
Yeah, Randy, I'll start off with just I know it's been a topic on the board about, you know, it appears that they're over scholarships right now. And there are offers that are continuing to go out, and there are in the 2020 class. And, you know, there could even be some guys setting official visits. I'll touch on that here in just a little bit. I've got a couple new little pieces of scoop I got just before we started the podcast. But in college football, you've got to protect your program, okay? And you're never not recruiting because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, you're closing in on 6 weeks until signing day. But you have no idea who you've recruited that may not make grades, that may be borderline academically. You don't know who out there could flip. You don't know who's gone out there, who maybe there's one or two kids. They haven't had good senior years. Maybe Kansas goes in a different direction. Maybe some of these kids have been offered that we didn't know about the one-year walk-on, and then they go on scholarship in year two. Maybe some of them are going to be a gray shirt or a blue shirt. I just tell people, don't get too tied up into this, because we've been watching this now at Kansas since they've been using this blue shirts and the gray shirt situation. Just kind of let the staff handle this. They've got a detailed recruiting board. They've got a tremendous staff. I know Tyler Oker and Will Redman and those guys in there, they know what they're doing. And they have the numbers figured out. Jeff Hutchinski, the recruiting coordinator. These guys talk. Dave Shoemate. These guys talk all the time. They know what's going on. So I'm not too concerned about what's happening because these guys have a plan and they know what's going on. Now, I want to talk about this weekend because there's a couple official visitors that are coming in. One of them is Cade Fortin, and he's a transfer quarterback from North Carolina. He doesn't do a lot of interviews. I've had a chance to dig around and talk to some people. I think this one may come down to Vanderbilt, Kansas, Syracuse, and maybe SMU sitting on the outside. I hear SMU may be looking at a couple other transfer quarterbacks too, but very athletic kid. Was in a quarterback battle at North Carolina, decided to transfer. And I think one of the interesting angles here is, you know, he knows Manny Miles, who was a quarterback at North Carolina. So he's also familiar with the, you know, the Miles situation. So there's a tie in there. And somebody asked me the other day, they said, well, what about Brent Dierman? If they've been recruiting Cade Fortin for this long, does Brent Dierman have a say in this? Absolutely he does. Trust me, Brent Dierman is going to have his stamp of approval on any quarterback. And my guess is they've been on Cade Fortin for a while. They were on him long before it came out that they were on him. So I promise Brent Dierman at some point or another said, I like this guy, I don't like this guy. And if he didn't, he wouldn't be coming on an official visit. So, and Will Huggins from Shawnee Mission South told me he's going to go ahead and take his official this weekend. I know Shawnee Mission South plays on Thursday, so he'll be able to enjoy the full weekend. And then some of the big news, Josh Rimetich, an offensive lineman from Louisiana. Les Miles went down and watched him play over the bye week. Rimetich just told me right before we went on the podcast here, he does plan to take an official visit December 6th through the 8th. It's looking like that's when it's going to be. You know, he's committed to Tulane right now. He's just visited Mississippi State. Another guy that I think Kansas is in good shape with is Armaje Adams, a 6'5", 315-pound offensive lineman out of DeSoto, Texas. I think
he's a big mean kid.
Oh, he is a big old guy. I mean, he's and he gets up on you and mauls you too. So he's one of those guys I could see, you know, if he could lean out and stay athletic, he could definitely be a tackle. If not, you could move him inside because he's mean and strong. But, you know, Emmett Jones has been on him, and I know the Kansas staff seems like they really like him, and they've started to pick up on him. You know, he was one of those guys that I thought was slipping through the Division I crack, or the Power 5 crack, you know, North Texas, Southern Miss, and Utah State, and there was a lot of schools that were good football programs like that were on him. But I'll tell you, man, this kid's got the size and the strength to go in. I think he's got a chance to play. You know, he might need a red shirt year. But I think the Jayhawks have moved out in front of him, with him. Leif Magnusson, an offensive lineman from Canada. I just had a story on him today. He will take an unofficial visit. He's going to stay the night over in Iowa. He may stop off at Nebraska on Sunday on the way back. But he's another kid that's starting to get a lot of play. He's starting to blow up right now. Bryson Bonds, an all-state safety. He was in last week for the Texas Tech game. He had a great time there. He told me he will now schedule an official. So there's another name. I know we keep talking about the 2020 class, and you say, where are you going to put all these guys? I think it's one of those things right now. If you can get guys like Bryson Bonds or Josh Rimetich or Armaje Adams, you take them. I don't know how you would turn them down, and you just figure out whatever's going on in the inside. They're going to figure it out. Another one to keep an eye on is offensive lineman Cedric Melton out of Texas. He's currently committed to Arizona, and he told me that he plans on setting an official visit to Kansas. So there's some guys out there, and there's some more names that are still popping up, but those are the big ones right now. And then turning to this coming weekend, some unofficial visitors, I expect. Keon Parker, a corner out of Booker T in Oklahoma, they've offered him. Jalen Richardson, KU commit. Luke Grimm, KU commit, will be there. I hear Bo Stevens, KU offer, offensive lineman out of Blue Springs in next year's class, will be there.
Jackson's big.
Yes, he is. He is. And he's going to be a kid that's going to get offers from all over the place. So that'll be one to watch. Jackson Stofen will be back. Max Colney, an offensive lineman from St. James. He's been offered the preferred walk-on to KU. Stanford's offered him one. And, you know, I think eventually somebody may end up offering him a scholarship. But he's a big, good-looking kid, and he'll be in. Another one, another offensive lineman from Kansas City, Christian Mazingo from St. Thomas Aquinas. He told me right before we went on the podcast he will visit. And Randy, I'll tell you what, it's going to be a busy time following the recruits, because I'm hearing there's going to be over 100 unofficial visitors on campus this weekend. So it is going to be something to keep our eyes on and keep us busy.
That is the latest from the Jayhawks on the recruiting trail. That is going to do it for another edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawksSlant.com. As always, thank you for joining us. I say it every week. We have so much fun putting this thing together, but it's all about our listeners, our subscribers, our fans that download it every week. If you're a KU fan and you enjoy what we're putting together, be sure, hey, reach one, teach one, tell another one of your friends that's in Jayhawk Nation that they should start downloading it and listen to us. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Tell everybody that you know that they should be listening, because this is the premier podcast for KU fans on the internet. That'll do it for John Kirby, our publisher and man on the football beat. I'm your host, Randy Withers. We will talk to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawksSlant.com.